Well, time doesn't allow us to go into a lot of detail about the conquest and all the sites involved. Of course, there's many sites named, but I thought that we could talk about two additional sites anyway. We could spend a little bit of time talking about the problem of Ai and also something about Hazor. Now, the Bible tells us there were three cities that were destroyed and burned by the Israelites: Jericho, and then Ai, and Hazor. Now, John Bimson and I have had a little back and forth about this matter of the destructions, because, of course, according to his idea, all of these destructions at the end of Middle Bronze really were conquest destructions. And that, at first, to me, seemed like an overkill approach, because the Bible doesn't specifically say the Israelites destroyed any more than these three. But the more I've worked with the data, the more I'm kind of leaning toward John's idea that there was a lot more destruction by the Israelites than just these three. Now, there is another term used in the narrative concerning these sites, and that is the term harem. They were devoted to the harem, the offering up to God. Now, just what does that exactly mean? We're not entirely sure, but it's quite possible that that term would suggest a burning as an offering. Perhaps, I don't know. But at this point, we're still trying to work out all the details and try to analyze all the data. But it does appear to me that there are quite a number of destructions that we can relate to the Israelites in 1400 B.C., other than these three. Now, the matter of Hazor, that evidence of Hazor supports pretty well any theory that you might have, because there are so many destructions of Hazor. I've mentioned the fact that Yigal Yadin excavated here in the 1950s and found a destruction at the end of the 13th century, second half of the 13th century. It's Stratum 13 in the upper city, Stratum 1A in the lower city. And on the back you have a map showing you Hazor. The upper city is down at the bottom here. It's the Tell. And then the lower city is everything above that, to the north, I guess it is. To the northwest. And then there was a big rampart that surrounded that upper city. So they gave different numbers to the areas in the lower city as opposed to the upper city. At any rate, Yadin said that this Stratum 13, or 1A, was the Israelite destruction. It went along, of course, with Albright's theory and so on. And so that is what you'll read in anything by Yigal Yadin. Now, for my part, I say that Stratum 15 is the conquest destruction. 15 was destroyed at the end of Late Bronze I, late 15th century. He puts down Thutmose III, or Amenhotep II, but the dating is not that precise. It could very well have been destroyed at the end of the 15th century. I mentioned the fact that if you assign the Stratum 13 destruction to the Israelite conquest, then there's no city there for Deborah and Barak. So myself, I believe the city of Deborah and Barak is 13, Stratum 13. /1A. Now, Bimson takes issue with me on this interpretation. He believes that the Stratum 16 destruction is the one that we should assign to the conquest, 16/3. His reason for that is that we have some evidence for burning here in 16/3. And in the the other one, the 15/2, we have no ash layers. Benson wants an ash layer because the Bible, of course, says the Israelites burned the city of Hazor. Now, when you look at the evidence from 16/3, you'll see that there's only one area out of, I don't know how many they dug, a dozen or more. They dug all these areas that you see here. Out of all those areas, the only place where they found ash was in one area. I think it's area C over here on the west side. That's the only place they found ash. And in none of the other areas did they find ash. So that's a problem for Bimson's idea. And the ash in C could be just a local fire. As far as 15 is concerned, the city was immediately rebuilt after that late Bronze I destruction. And when a city is immediately rebuilt, you don't find a lot of ash left around because people clean up the city. Take any fire that you're familiar with in a downtown area where there's been a lot of buildings destroyed. Well, if you go there after the place is rebuilt, you won't find a layer of ash. They cleaned it up. If you go over into Europe and look for evidence of World War II destructions, I don't think you'll find a layer of ash there because they rebuilt the buildings. They cleaned it out. If you have a situation like you have here with the Stratum 13, where it was abandoned after that destruction, then you indeed find the ash because it was simply left there. There's a lot of ash from that destruction. At Jericho, as I just explained, there's a great thick layer of ash because it was left abandoned. Then it was covered over with this erosional layer. And then when someone came along after that, they just simply build on top of it. So preserved under that is the ash layer. But if a city is immediately rebuilt, you simply don't find the ash. But what's of interest in this Stratum 15, Late Bronze I phase, is that when they cleaned up the city to rebuild it, they dumped all of the debris into cisterns that had been dug previously, deep cisterns. And these cisterns are full of an ashy mixture with pottery and all kinds of stuff from the cleanup. So that's good enough for me. I think that's the evidence for a burning of the city. And then it was immediately reoccupied. So it was cleaned up, and you don't find a thick layer of ash like you do when the site is destroyed. So at any rate, as far as I know, Bimson still holds to his idea of Stratum 16 as being the conquest destruction and 15 being something else. But I don't go along with that. The pottery, for one thing, of 15 is exactly like the pottery at Jericho, whereas 16 is not. It's earlier pottery. So anyway, we're working on things like that between Benson and myself. Let's talk about I, because that is a really big problem. Yeah.
Is this chronological? No.
No, that's from the excavation report. So those are...
Yeah, not next day. We disagree with the description, but we accept the correlation between upper city and the period.
Yes, his dates are quite good. They're not precise, you know, he gives a big range for his dates. I'm also involved in the problem of I, because the Associates for Biblical Research has a field project in connection with locating the site of ancient Ai. The problem with Ai is a bit different from that at Jericho. We know, there's a site that's called Ai. It's Et Tel, that's the Arabic name, Et Tel, and that's been identified as the Ai of the Bible. The problem is that at the site of Et Tel, there was no occupation in the Middle Bronze Age or the Late Bronze Age. There's a big, long occupational gap from early Bronze III, when the city was destroyed, all the way down to the Iron One period. So again, it doesn't matter what date you might pick for the conquest, there's no city there to be conquered by Joshua and the Israelites, whether it's 1400 or 1230, it doesn't matter. So Ai is another big problem in biblical archaeology, and again, the critics will point to Jericho, no evidence for occupation at the time of the conquest, and then they'll say, and Ai, throw them both in together, and this conclusively proves that the biblical narrative is simply, folk stories, campfire tales. It's not history. There's no evidence for any conquest of these places by the Israelites. Now, the question at Ai is with regard to its location. Is this really the Ai of Joshua 7 and 8? We don't think so, and we're doing field work to find an alternative possibility. When you search for Ai, you must also search for Bethel, because the two cities are always mentioned together. They're sort of like twin cities. Bethel was the more important of the two, so we have more knowledge about Bethel than we do about Ai. So you really have to start out by doing research on Bethel, and if you can locate Bethel, then you can locate Ai, because the Bible, or it'll help you locate Ai, because the Bible gives the location of Ai relative to Bethel. Now, the way there's a site today that's identified as Bethel, and the way that came about is from Edward Robinson. So we begin our search with the location of Bethel. Now, there's a site called Beitin, which scholars today believe is Bethel. Beitin is north of Jerusalem, and it was, as I say, identified by Edward Robinson in 1840. Now, the way he located Bethel was to measure north of Jerusalem, because we're told in Eusebius's Onomasticon that Bethel is 12 Roman miles north of Jerusalem. If you look on page 3 of your handout, there's some information there about what Eusebius has to say about the location of Bethel. It's 12 Roman miles north of Jerusalem. So in 1840, Robinson was doing research on the locations of various biblical sites. And so he was aware of this information from Eusebius. So it was simply a matter of following the old Roman road north of Jerusalem, 12 Roman miles. And that would bring you to Bethel. And then we're told Ai is west of Bethel. And so you can simply go west of the site of Bethel and you'll come to Ai. So, pardon? I'm sorry, east, yes, sorry. Bethel's west of Ai. Thank you. So Robinson got on his horse, and the way he would determine distances was by clocking his horse, because he knew approximately how fast his horse traveled. So he got on his horse, began riding north of Jerusalem, and when he had gone the appropriate time to have covered 12 Roman miles, he stopped his horse and he said, "This is Bethel," got off, and he was in the site of at the site of Beitin. Well, that's really neat, because one of the things Robinson liked to do was correlate the modern Arabic names with ancient biblical names. And a lot of times there is a correspondence. The modern name will sometimes preserve an ancient name of a site. So here at Beitin, we have the Arabic word for house, Beit, which is the same as Beth in Hebrew. So you've got house, and then you've got the I-N. Well, of course, you really have to look at the consonants, never mind the vowels there. and I really wasn't the part of the original name, it was simply the consonants. And so to go from an original L to an N is quite conceivable. There could have been that shift in time where what was originally Bethel, through time, came to, somewhat corrupted, came to be Bethim. And so this seemed to be a fairly good match. Then he went east of the site of Bethim, and he came to the site of Et Tel. Just, I think it's only 2 kilometers east of Bethim. So he said, well, this must be the site of Ai. Because what does Ai mean in the Bible? In fact, let's not say Ai, let's say Ha'ai, because that's usually the way it's written in the Hebrew. Ha'ai, the Ai. What does Ai mean? Ai means ruin in Hebrew. So the Hebrew name is the ruin. What does Et Tel mean in Arabic? The ruin. Perfect. We have Bethel and we have Ai. Now the problem is, of course, that at Et Tel there was no occupation for the Middle Bronze and Late Bronze period, and there was no city there for the Israelites to conquer. That's number one problem. David Livingston got involved in this project, this problem, many years ago, over 20 years ago, and he started doing research on the location of Bethel to begin with, and from that he hoped to find the true location of Ai. Well, David Livingston checked the mileage from Jerusalem out to Bethim, and he found it's not 12 Roman miles at all, it's 14 Roman miles out to Bethim. And in fact, if you go 12 Roman miles, you come to modern El Bira, which is right next to Ramallah. So Livingston wrote up several articles in the Westminster Theological Journal quite a number of years ago with the evidence for locating Bethel at El Bira. I'm not going to go into all the arguments. You can read that material over yourself. The main thing is the mileage. It's 12 Roman miles. And in fact, there's some other mileages given in the Onomasticon. You can read them there on page 3. It's 3 Roman miles from Gibeon. From 4 Roman miles from Gibeon, 3 Roman miles from the Valley of Adullam. Well, there's no way that Bethim fits these measurements, so it has to be El Bira. Livingston's been fighting kind of a lonely battle in this whole thing because everybody has accepted Bethim as Bethel. Albright accepted it. He excavated there one season. And in the literature, they don't even say Bethim. It's always Bethel, 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 Bethel in all the literature. Everybody accepts that. And one of the world's experts in ancient site locations in Palestine, Anson Rainey, believes Bethim is Bethel. He doesn't want to give that up. And so it's firmly entrenched, and here comes this unknown fellow, David Livingston, saying, no, you're all wrong. Albright's wrong. Robinson's wrong. Everybody's wrong. It's really at El Bira, and nobody's really taken him very seriously, unfortunately, because the evidence, I think, is very convincing that Bethel should be at El Bira. Now, another scholar has come into the picture recently, an English fellow, Rupert Chapman, and he was doing some work with this Eusebius's Onomasticon. I guess they're coming out with an English translation of it, and he was doing some work on the, not the translation itself, but on the locations of various places according to Eusebius, and checking our what we know about these places and so on. So he got interested in this question of the location of Bethel. And he totally agrees with David Livingston that Bethel has to be at El Bira. And I don't know when he's going to publish his findings, his article, but I encourage him to get something out as soon as possible. He's waiting for this book on Eusebius's Onomasticon to come out, and that's going to take years. They don't even have a publisher. But anyway, he's the only other person that I know of that's really seriously looked at the data, the evidence, and he agrees with Livingston. So, at any rate, that seems to me to be the correct location for Bethel. Then if we go east of El Bira, we come to the little site of Herbert Nisya. And this is the site that Livingston believes is Ai. And we've been digging there, I think, 9 seasons or something like that, looking for the evidence that Herbert Nisya is Ai. Now, let's just look at a couple of scriptures here that will tell us something about the city of Ai from the Bible. First of all, we have the reference in Genesis 12:8 of Abraham when he came into the promised land of building the altar between Bethel and Ai. So that's an important reference. From there, of course, he first went to Shechem, but from there, verse 8 of Genesis 12, he went on toward the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abram set out and continued toward the Negev. So this tells us that there should be a hill between Bethel and Ai. It tells us that Ai is east of Bethel. It tells us that they're not very far apart, because evidently you could see both of them from where he had camped. It also tells us that both places were known to Abraham. Not necessarily occupied, but they had a name, and they were known to him in his day. So there must have been something there in the early Bronze period. I would put Abraham in EB3. So there must have been something there at his time. Then, if we go to the book of Joshua and the description there of the taking of the city by the Israelites, we have a couple more references that will help us. Joshua 7:5 speaks about a gate. And also in 8:29, we also have reference to a gate. So because of these references, we know the city was fortified. So we must have a city gate, we must have a city wall. We read in 8:11 about a valley on the north. This is not as helpful because almost every site in Israel has a valley on the north. 8:12 speaks about an ambush on the west, so there must be a place for an army to hide on the west. Here again, in the hill country, I think every place has somewhere on the west where an army could hide. But nevertheless, these have to be kept in mind. Then 10:2 tells us that Ai was a small place, smaller than Gibeon. So we shouldn't expect a large city here. Gibeon's 16 acres, so Ai must have been something smaller than that. Then Joshua 8:28 tells us, finally, when the Israelites did conquer the site, that they made it a heap of ruins, a desolation, and they burned it. They burned it first and then made it a heap of ruins. 8:28. So we should expect to find some evidence of a destruction at the time of the Israelite conquest. And probably a period of abandonment after that, the way this is worded. Now, perhaps this is where the name Ai comes from. They made it a permanent heap of ruins. The problem with Herbert Nisya is, so far, we have not found evidence for any occupation in Abraham's day, EB3, and we have not found any evidence for fortifications. We keep looking and searching, but so far that evidence has eluded us. We do have evidence for occupation in the time of the conquest. We have some late Bronze I pottery, a lot of pottery from the end of Middle Bronze. So that fits very nicely. In fact, the occupational history of Herbert Nisius fits very nicely with the occupational history of Ai as we know it, with the exception of occupation from the time of Abraham. But at any rate, there are these problems with regard to Herbert Nisius. Now, I have another possibility, and very quickly, I think we have time to look at some slides here. All right, let's localize these places. Here's Jerusalem. Here's the site of Elvira, right next to Ramallah. They sort of run in together. That's a PLO center right in there. There's a lot of trouble in Ramallah. You hear about it in the news all the time. The settler was just murdered north of this area a couple of weeks ago. Then the site of Beitim that we talked about is here. And the site of Ettel is just east a couple of kilometers. This village is here, wide here. And Ettel is right about here. Now, our site is right here next to this Israeli settlement. It's a goat. It's just a little bit east of that. There's no question but what the 12 Roman miles from the center of the cult, the center of Jerusalem, from city, the Roman city of Jerusalem, because that's where they always had their 0 milestone. If you count off 12 Roman miles, it brings you right into Elvira, and this is 14 Roman miles. And Elvira is really a more centralized location, and I'm sure it would have been a very important site in antiquity, and to me, it's the best candidate for that. The problem is we can't excavate, because it's a modern town, it's a very large town. Now here's the site of Ettel, and there's a very large early Bronze Age settlement there with a very large temple, and that's what you see here. And then there's early Bronze settlement, early Iron Age settlement on the slopes as well. So this is what the site of Ettel looks like when you go there. I'll just quickly run through this. There's a massive wall around the site. Ettel was one of the largest early Bronze Age cities in Canaan, if not the largest. It was a very, very important site in Abraham's day. Here we see the city wall on the right from the early Bronze period. Here's a tower that you see from the early Bronze city wall. And this is the early Bronze temple. Now we come, there's a big gap. This is still early Bronze. This is a reservoir from early Bronze. And then there's a big gap, and we come to the Iron I period when we have some remains, I think from the 12th century is the earliest, in this area excavated by Calloway. Four-room houses with the pillars, typical of the Iron I period. From the site of Ettel, I guess this is the village of Deir Dhawan, which is another PLO hotspot, so it makes it difficult to do any work there today. If you look, that's looking straight east. If you look to the south, you see this little place here, which is right next to big site of Ettel. I think that would be a very good candidate for Joshua's Eye. And the big early Bronze city would be Abraham's Eye. That's my explanation for the solution to the problem. Then the hill where he camped would be over here, and then just on the other side of that is Elvira. And some iron II material, and some middle bronze, And it looks to me like this little place was occupied when the big site next to it was not occupied. It has a wall all around it, which looks to be a modern terrace wall, but I can't conceive of an Arab building around a terrace wall like that. So perhaps there's an earlier wall under it, or maybe that is the earlier wall. I don't know. Yeah.
Is this an Etel?
Etel, yeah. This is the edge of Etel, and it's just, oh, it's right next to it. It's funny, Calloway, when he was working at Etel, knew, of course, of this problem of Gath and no city there for Joshua and the Israelites. And so he excavated many sites all around there looking for an alternative location where there might be some occupation from the time of the conquest. Of course, to him it was 13th century. But he excavated a number of sites around Etel, but never once dug at this site. I guess it was so close he couldn't see it or something. Nobody's ever dug there. Nobody ever even had it identified and plotted on a map as being an ancient site until Dorsey found it. He inquired. They sent some people out to do a survey. And the Israelis have written it off as a Byzantine farm, so they're not interested in it. Our group, ABR, has shirted the site once, and we have found earlier pottery than Byzantine. And I would like to excavate if the situation ever clears up over there. So that's my suggestion. But as I say, the Associates for Biblical Research are excavating right here at Kerbednisia. So let's kind of very quickly look at that site. It's located here. It's a site built right on bedrock, and there's no stratification whatsoever. It was heavily occupied in the Byzantine period, and they pretty well wiped out anything earlier. So we find early pottery in later fills, where the Byzantines have brought material in to make a terrace or whatever. And we find Middle Bronze and Late Bronze I pottery, and Iron Age I and Iron Age II, Persian, Hellenistic, anything earlier than Byzantine is represented in these fills. This is a valley going down to the Jordan Valley, leads down to New Testament Jericho. And this is from the valley looking back up toward our site here. Here's some of our groups that have worked there. This is the modern Israeli settlement there that started out with just caravans, they call them, trailers. Now they've got a very substantial town there. The Israelis have taken a great interest in our work. They're Orthodox Jews, and of course anything Old Testament is of interest to them. We've found material from the Arabic period, as you see here, a lamp and some coins there on the left. Evidently there was a church there at one time, because we found a fragment of a chancel screen which was used in the Byzantine churches. Early Roman cooking pot to go with that. We found a very nice mikveh, which is a ritual bath. These Orthodox Jews were very interested in this. They came down and measured it and saw it, because they, in their settlement, have a modern mikveh, and they use it today. And this meets all the requirements from the Mishnah or the Talmud or wherever it's written for the ritual bath. We found a very nice olive press cave there, which dates to probably just before the time of Christ. And it's the best preserved in Israel, we're told, because it was built in a cave, and all the cuttings and fittings and stones, everything is still preserved there inside the cave. Here's an area where we found a lot of Iron Age I pottery, so it's well represented from that time period. Undoubtedly was an early Israelite settlement. We found a very important Iron I burial here with some jewelry and some pottery, rather poorly preserved. Here you see some of the jugs. It's right at the transition from Late Bronze to Iron Age I. Here's some of the jewelry. Bronze bracelets and iron bracelets. Some a signet here, toggle pins. And going back earlier, here's some of our material from the end of Middle Bronze. And some of this even comes into Late Bronze I. Nice Middle Bronze dagger there, a nice scarab here from the Middle Bronze period, a pommel from a dagger. lots of flints, lots of sling stones. Here's where we dug a couple of years ago, found a nice Herodian structure, which may be a defensive tower of some sort. But that was built on some earlier walls. And I think these earlier walls might go back to Iron Age, and in fact, perhaps even Middle Bronze, because we found some Middle Bronze pottery here. So last October, we went back and dug a square adjacent to this, hoping to find the continuation of some of these large stones. Here's our guard. We have to have a guard working in this area since it's on the west bank. Alas, we found nothing but the Byzantine, some early pottery as usual, but no in situ architecture. We found this doorway, intact doorway from a Byzantine house built right on bedrock. So far, no evidence that Nicaea is definitely high. So, I remains a problem for us. I think we've solved the problem of Jericho, but we have not solved the problem of I yet. What's the solution to the conquest problem? I think the solution is to reanalyze all of these destructions that have been attributed to the end of the Middle Bronze. I think Jericho is a type site for us now, and that we'll find a similar situation with most of the other sites. I think the problem is that they were incorrectly dated. I've looked at one other site in detail since I did the work on Jericho. I've looked at Tel Beit Mirsim, and again, it was destroyed in late Bronze I, not 1550, as Albright claimed, based on his idea about the expulsion of Hyksos. But there's plenty of late Bronze I pottery there that he ignored or overlooked, they didn't know about. And so I'm working on an article now on Tel Beit Mirsim. I'm not sure if the Israelites destroyed it because we don't know the ancient name of it, of the site, but it's in the hill country. It's in the area where they campaigned. So I suspect that the Israelites did indeed destroy it. It was violently destroyed in about 1400. And so this is the task ahead of us, to look at all the archaeological data from all the excavated sites in the hill country to see if they've been misdated. And I think at the end of that process, in another 25 years, perhaps we can put together a story from the archaeological data that will correlate with our biblical narrative concerning the conquest of Canaan. Well, I think we better wrap it up at that point. Anybody have a question on Ai or Hatzor or the conquest?
What's your view on the location of the city of Ai?
I think it's this. Well, I think there was two eyes. There was Abraham's eye, which is Et Tel, and then I think Joshua's eye is this little place next to it, merely a fortress, really, is what it looks like to me. And the Bible tells us it was only a little place.
So you're saying that this conquest this year is wrong?
I think so. At this point, we just don't have the evidence yet for it being a biblical eye. Especially from Abraham's time, there's nothing there. No fortifications, no walls, no gates.
The
what?
The 12th Roman Mount.
Yes.
Mount, you said that it's closer to
Yes. It's at Albira. I think Bethel's at Albira. Yes. With. South of east. And Abraham would have camped here somewhere. There's a couple of nice big hills here where you can see both Ephel and Bethel. So I think that's the solution, but we can't prove it, so we can excavate that little place next to Ephel.
How far is Elvira from Ephel?
It's about, let's see, it's about 11 miles from here to here. And so that's 2 miles on the train.
If we have that thing 2 miles, I mean, it's right
to the 1 mile. Oh, my goodness, you can see the Mediterranean from here. We can see the Dead Sea from our site, from Herbert Nisia. Oh, yeah, no problem.